You're listening to Spouting Off with Karen Cataline.
Welcome back, everyone. We do have our guest on hold. It just seems to be the fun time. It's a good thing I try my best to be prepared. But I do want to tell you that we are starting to get Spouting Off podcasts after the fact on from WSMN, Tuesdays and Thursdays. I particularly loved the show on Thursday. I'm beginning to really love doing all these shows. Sometimes we have glitches and so forth, but hey, it's live talk radio. What are you going to do? But still, we enjoy putting these up on my website. So if you'd like to visit us, and if there's a show you missed, we'll be able to start putting some of these up. We have a couple up now. Just go to KarenCataline.com. That's Karen, spelled the normal way. Cataline, spelled KATALINE.com. Lots of writings and postings, and you can get on my newsletter if you'd like. Would love to hear from you. Well, let me jump right over to our guest. Commentator and former political advisor to the Deputy Foreign Minister of Israel. He also worked for the Israeli Ministry of Defense, director of the Middle East Forum. The Middle East, a Philadelphia-based think tank, was founded in 1994 by Daniel Pipes, really good guy too, to promote American interests in the Middle East and protect Western values from Middle Eastern threats. I guess you figure we're going to be talking a little bit about the Middle East and Israel. Good afternoon. Greg Roman joins us. Thanks for your time, Greg. Good to meet you.
Thank you, and thank you for having me.
Well, it's good to have you, too. So it's always a fascinating thing to me that every time the left gets in power, they always do the same things. I mean, it doesn't matter in the last how many years, but there's an agenda that really is so much more radical than they wanted us to believe. And one of them is to stick it to Israel. And the thing they hate most of all is what Donald Trump was able to do. Wasn't even one of his campaign promises, which is to get us independent from foreign oil, meaning Arab oil. Donald Trump did it in less than 4 years. And what does the left do? They shut down, speaking of pipes, they shut down the pipeline. They don't want America independent of foreign oil, and they stick it to Israel every chance they get. What's going on right now with this administration, Greg Roman?
Right now, as I just wrote in the American Spectator, situation where the administration is engaging in what I would call something for nothing diplomacy. The idea that we capitulate, we offer, we grovel, we try to be politically correct, when all of our adversaries are using this as a way to get an advantage on us and to promote their long-term strategic goals at the expense of both American respect and, more importantly, American national security concerns, both in the Middle East and throughout the rest of the world, specifically as it relates to the U.S.-Israel relationship. And this paradigm shift where Trump was holding our adversaries accountable, he respected them, but he still held them in line, has now led to the U.S. again repeating the Obama administration policies of throwing our allies under the proverbial bus. And it's not going to be good for us in the long run.
You know, everywhere we turn, it seems as if the people that were elected, or at least appointed, or at least we think they were elected, I don't think they were in the case of the current president. Nevertheless, when the left and with these socialists get in power, they have it in for America to such an extent, they seem to be colluding with our adversaries. The nice way of putting it is the way Trump puts it, which is Trump is America first and Biden is America last. But look at the connotation of that. When you really think about it, somebody who's in charge of America, or at least in the most powerful position in the Western world, who's advocating policies that harm the United States. Let's get specific and tell us some of the things that's happening now that would never have happened under Donald Trump.
So let's look at four or five examples. And of course, we'll go through the prism of the Middle East, since that's my area of expertise.
Yes.
And I have to say, I do think that Biden is the legitimate president of the United States. He's treated as such. And when we question that...
He is treated as such, but we're allowed to question it.
When we question that, it puts us to delegitimize our own perspective of being able to deal with him as a serious individual and someone who's very intent on, putting him back to last. And that's why
Let me just interrupt. Most people not only are not sure that the election was fair, and we're not going to go down that route because that's not what you're here to talk about, but most people also, it's fairly obvious that Joe Biden is in the middle stages of mental decline, and we should be able to talk about that.
It's fair to talk about, but I think it's not Biden who's responsible insofar as coming up with his policies. It's the third act of the Obama administration. That's what I wanted to focus on.
Exactly.
That it's the same policymakers and intelligence professionals who are recasting Biden's policies as something new. They're like, for instance, on Guantanamo.
It's Obama 3.0 on steroids. I said it before the election. So we fundamentally agree. The same people, all the same policies.
Let's look at the Guantanamo Bay policy for a second.
Yes.
There was an article that came out in the New York Times over the weekend, which was talking about the return of a Moroccan national under security conditions and certain restrictions from Guantanamo, which was actually negotiated under the Trump administration. But what Biden's doing now is, instead of projecting it and yelling out to the world, we're closing down Guantanamo like Obama did in the first year of his administration, he's doing everything silently. And that silent action, that silent presidential proclamation where he's just acting without having a national discussion about policies, is what's so dangerous about him. It starts with Guantanamo. We don't know what's going on in terms of the conversations between his diplomats in the Middle East and the promises that they're giving and the wink and the nod that they're trying to have with the virtue of shutting Guantanamo down. We don't know what happened with the Yemen cutoff of aid to the Saudi military, which, in the end of the day, it's basically protecting the U.S.'s southern flank in the Middle East. But all of a sudden in February, we said we're no longer supplying intelligence to our allies who are fighting a war there against Iran. And the same thing is happening with the Iran negotiations taking place in Vienna, Austria right now, between the American negotiating team and the Iranian negotiating team. We have arguably the most extreme Iranian president coming into power, replacing Rouhani, and we're not hearing one blip of what the U.S. is capitulating to in those negotiations, which so far, according to leaks that have come from there, limited information, includes delisting the Iranian Revolutionary Guard Corps as a terror organization, treating them as a normal military body, giving hundreds of billions of dollars back to the Iranians that have been frozen under Trump's reinstatement of sanctions since 2018, and worse than that, recognizing the Iranians as a partner for the U.S. in the Middle East rather than as an adversary.
Mm-hmm.
We're back where we are in 2014.
They're treating them like an adversary because they are. To them, they are. I mean, look at Samantha Power and her husband. What's his face? I'm sorry. What's his name? I mean, these people are ideological communists, aren't they? They don't like America. But then, you know, I'm generalizing and you're going specific. This is a fascinating discussion. Let me ask you about Afghanistan. I've talked to several people who have said that even though Donald Trump does not believe in fighting foreign wars, wanted to get out of foreign wars, there's a reason he did not pull people out of Afghanistan right away, because I believe he knew that if you pull people out of Afghanistan, and that's the first place they wanted to pull people out of, our troops out of Afghanistan, you have almost an immediate training ground back where we were with ISIS, with all of those, the Muslim Brotherhood, all of the terrorist organizations train in Afghanistan, the Taliban. And so isn't it interesting? Am I wrong? Am I off base there?
No, you're not wrong at all. Look, Afghanistan, whether you like it or not, is like the beauty pageant for extremists. It's as if they were to put ISIS, the Taliban, and Al-Qaeda on the Atlantic City boardwalk, and they were competing for a radical crown, okay? That's what Afghanistan is. And once you acknowledge that and you recognize that whoever rules over Afghanistan will act as the ability to put proxies for terror organizations in that very area of the world, which has been such a thorn in the side of not just the communists in Russia in the 70s and 80s, but also of Pakistan and of India and of Iran to a certain extent in the 90s, and the United States for the last 20 years. So when the United States made the decision to enter Afghanistan in 2001 after the 9/11 attacks, for policymakers then, if they knew their history going back to when the Brits were involved there in the 1700s to the Afghan-British Wars, it's a place where you have to have an open-ended commitment. And at the end of the day, it's the job of the U.S. national security apparatus to prevent attacks. It's like Lindsey Graham said, it's better that we fight the war over there than wait until it comes here. And I know that
it seems like they want to bring the war here. They got open borders and they're training terrorists.
It's happening, and it's a hard fact. American lives would be lost if we had continued the ongoing presence of American military forces in Afghanistan. But I would put a proffer there of saying that I think more American lives will be lost in the future because of the immediacy and the sudden nature of the pullout that took place. So it's really balancing, you know, what's bad and what's worse.
So
and
then,
I think it was extremely irresponsible for the way in which the Biden administration pulled out of Afghanistan, and we might have to go back.
I think you're being kind, Greg, because you are a fair-minded person and you're being kind. But when you see a pattern and you put all these things together, forgive me, but I mean, these things don't happen in a vacuum. Not only is this the Obama 3.0 on steroids, but it's sticking it to America in every single policy. Every single policy.
I have one caveat to that on every single policy. And there is one area, one ray of light, one individual ray of light.
Oh, I love rays of light. Go ahead.
Where they're actually doing well. And that is on holding Turkey accountable. Turkey has been trying to interfere in American elections, siphoning money to both Republicans and Democrats, trying to usurp our ability to have a trans-European continental defense strategy with NATO, and has basically been supporting extremists, even with ISIS. I mean, they were funding ISIS through illicit oil sales when the U.S. was trying to fight back against them in Syria and Raqqa. This guy Erdogan is bad news. And the one portion of the State Department and the Defense Department that's looking at Erdogan, the president of Turkey and his son-in-law, is finally holding them to account. And that's one thing that you got to give them credit for. That might change, okay? But that's one thing that they're doing well.
Well, let's go back, if we could, with a little bit of our time left. We don't have too much time, but your knowledge is clearly extensive. I mean, I have all I can do to stay on top of what's going on here, and that's impossible to do. But we welcome every topic, whether I'm an expert or not, and I certainly am not. Let's talk about the things that enabled Trump to make such phenomenal progress in peace to the Middle East. There was a time, and not long before Trump came on, when people said there will always be war in the Middle East. It is a fact of life. And Trump was able, with going around these proxy countries, these countries who are conducting proxy wars, he was able to get enough buy-in from some of these more moderate countries to allow people to even imagine that peace could be possible in the Middle East. I think, along with all the other things that he has exposed in the deep state, he exposed the reality that they don't want peace in the Middle East. That's why we haven't had it. Am I wrong? Again.
I think that the underlying conclusion that American foreign policy professionals don't want peace in the Middle East is going maybe a little bit too far, but I think that their policies that they have tried to apply, which what I would call American traditionalist foreign policy thinking, since 1776, if you even want to argue it, the U.S. has had a relationship with the Middle East since our Declaration of Independence, has been disrupted by someone who brought in a team of individuals who had a real estate background, background in law, and a background in business. And you had three individuals, David Friedman, Jared Kushner, and Avi, I forget his last name now. But anyway, the three individuals there who were able basically to look at this in terms of a calculation of interests instead of a political calculus or a security calculus. Take Morocco and Israel. Morocco faces extremists, the Muslim Brotherhood in its parliament. It's not doing well on cybersecurity. It needs access to energy. It has water problems. And it wanted U.S. recognition of the Western Sahara, an area which has been the subject of a bane of contention for 45 years. So Trump's team came in and said, you know what, we can help you with all these areas. And by the way, the Israelis, they can help you too. And the Israelis had to make the commitment to not annex any land in Judea and Samaria, the West Bank. So these two guys put the interest together. They said, let's have a meeting of the minds. You guys sign a deal. The same thing happened with the Sudanese, the Emirates, the Bahrainis, and other states which were on their way. And it only required the U.S. guarantee that it would keep the status quo between those countries after the deal was signed.
Unfortunately, we have to leave it there. Go ahead and sum up, but we have to leave it there.
15 seconds. Yeah. Now that the traditionalists and the Obamacrats have come back under Biden, we now find ourselves in a situation where the U.S. is not upholding those guarantees, and the progress that Trump made is being threatened. And I think that's the biggest issue, that the U.S. is going back on its word.
Absolutely. And when you're allowing people to train terrorists, I think it's reasonable to consider that war is what they seem to want and they're invested in. I have to wrap it up. How can people find you real quick?
Sure. Check us out, MEforum.org, MEFORUM.org. We're on Twitter at MEforum.
Wonderful. Greg Roman, two G's, three G's, actually. Greg Roman, thank you so much for joining us. Fascinating conversation. We got to wrap that. We got to leave it there. Karen Cataline, thank you for listening to Spouting Off. Thanks to Art and Juan and all the people at WSMN. We'll be back on Thursday with more here on Spouting Off.